while you're testing your email, also look at it for the tone. Look at it to make sure it has personality. Look at it to make sure that it can connect with your audience.
Welcome to Small Business BS, the podcast designed to ignite your entrepreneurial spirit through thought-provoking ideas and actionable business strategies. Each week, entrepreneurs Adam Whitmer and Jeff Gargis dive into creative marketing hacks, proven sales methods, and clever growth strategies. Get ready to unlock the full potential of your business with insights that are both fun and impactful. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Gargis and Adam Whitmer.
Welcome to episode 30 of the Small Business BS podcast. I'm Adam Whitmer, and I'm here with my co-host, Jeff Gargis. And in today's episode, we're going to talk about email marketing mistakes, things to avoid, things not to do, and things that you should consider skipping. So, Jeff, today we're going to talk about email marketing mistakes. And I know you've been doing email marketing for probably longer than I. We've both been doing it for quite a while. We've both studied it. We've tried to master it. We've tried to view it as an art form. But in today's episode, we're going to talk about email marketing mistakes. So before we start into the mistakes, why is it important to do email marketing right? I'm just curious on your take on that. Somebody who's been doing email for a long time, what are the benefits to doing email marketing the right way? Then we could talk about the mistakes to avoid.
Yeah, so we've talked about email marketing in previous episodes, so we can go back and do that. I think most recently was in our part of our content marketing series, was part 4. I think it was episode 26, where we talked about like the basics. I think we cover better in there. We don't have to go super detailed right here. But the reality is that email marketing is really the only true place where you have the most control over the messaging that gets to the people that are interested in what you do. We talk about, you know, borrowed land and social media and algorithms and things like that, that you might build a massive following and they may never see what you have to say, or they may only see certain things, or that platform might choose that you have to pay to play, et cetera, et cetera. With email, like, it's yours. You own that list. Even if the platform you're using goes out of business, you can take that list and go somewhere else, whatever, et cetera. But you have control over what it is. And it becomes this communication tool for you to be able to build that know, like, and trust factor with your audience, with your potential customers, and to lead them on the journey, their buyer's journey, and to get them to where they become customers and then they become fans, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's sort of like the really rough overview of email marketing. And I think with email marketing, it's like, it's the thing that has, it's been here for a long time. Like you mentioned, like we've been doing it, you know, quite a while, but it was a thing long before you and I even got into businesses and stuff, right? It's been here since before social media, and it has continued to outlast all the social media sites. It's evolved, don't get me wrong, but it continues to do that, and I think it's going to continue. One thing that I always point to, Adam, is if think about how many people you know that still have like an AOL.com email address or a Hotmail address. Like, people hold on to that. Like, it's important to them versus the social media site. We don't really have MySpace anymore, even though it does exist. Like, we don't, you know what I mean? So, like, I think it's super important because it's that consistency, it's the strength, it's direct, it's, and you have more control. So, I think that covers why you should be using. If this wasn't enough, go back and listen to a few of our other episodes where we talk about email marketing. We'll convince you, I promise.
So, hey, I just, based on what you said, I'm shocked. I didn't know MySpace still existed. That's what I took away from what you just said.
I could be wrong. It was sold like not that long ago, but like, I think it's still a thing.
That's awesome.
Adam, I'm actually really interested. We are going to pause for a second. I'm going to literally look up if it's still a thing or not. MySpace.com. It is there. You can go to news. They have artist of the day. And it's like legit, like, you know, news. Let's see. The artist of the day is Chaperone.
Thing the young kids are doing.
Like, wow. Top eight words that aren't Spanish, but people think they are. That's interesting. Is it top eight? Like, it's like, yeah, it's, I don't know what it is anymore. I could sign up. I could actually make a thing. But yeah. So anyway, MySpace is still a thing, but like, when I don't know anyone who actually uses it. Someone bought it. I completely agree. Not too long ago, though.
I love what you said, Jeff, that, you know, email marketing is something you own. It, the way I view it, especially for a business, it's an asset. So this is something that is your true asset. It's a a core piece of your business that you're able to own and control. And so when you have an email list, that's your asset. Like you said, if the platform goes away, you still have control of it. Where some businesses will, you know, build their following on a social media platform that will change an algorithm or ban them or whatever, and that asset is gone. And so this is an asset that you can actually hold near and dear to your heart. You can back up, you can put it in a bank vault. And so it's there. So I love that. I love that. That's a great setup to this. And that means, I think the result of that is, of course, that it's all the more important for us to get email marketing right and to do email marketing the right way. And so, you know, there's a lot of times where we do things in email marketing that we don't even realize are problematic. And, you know, at the end of the day, the reason we're doing email marketing is we're trying to get customers and potential customers, people who have shown an interest in our business, to become loyal to us, either through having marketing emails that are branding, or to purchase, to have email marketing emails that are requesting a purchase. And so we're trying to have them do something. It's either to be loyal to our brand, to know that we're there, or to purchase something. We'll talk about more of that in a different episode at some point. But if we're not doing those things, I think that we're missing a huge opportunity. And so, Jeff, I think we can go back and forth here and talk about some email marketing mistakes. You know, what are some of the email marketing mistakes you think of? And maybe I'll start us out with one. Why not? And then you can jump in and let's just do a little bit of back and forth, round robin. I think the first and probably biggest email marketing mistake that we can make is to send emails to people without permission. I don't know about you, but I hate it. I hate it. I think of this as like crashing a wedding, right? I've never done it and you've never done it, but they made movies about going into a wedding where you're not invited and just literally crashing the wedding. If you are sending emails randomly to somebody without permission, that you got their email address off of LinkedIn or you got it somewhere else, it comes across rude. I don't like it. It happens to me a lot. Do you have an experience with that, Jeff, where you don't like that, or you've run across that?
Yeah, so it happens to me all the time too. I mean, it's really if you put yourself out there as owning a business and your contact info is available, typically you're going to get a lot of the sales stuff. That's just reality of it, because people go and find it, right? And they're like, let me find anyone who has like this title or whatever. So yeah, I get it. I don't enjoy it. It's a big norm. We have done cold emailing, but only with email addresses that are publicly available. Not things that we had to go like steal. And we try to be very careful with the way in which we approach those. But I will tell you, they don't work well. So don't do it anyway. But I think most importantly is you just happen to snag someone's email, like, and I'm talking about like we're B2B. So like it's a little bit different, quote unquote, depending on who you talk to. But like cold email, cold calling, and B2B is very common, right? Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I guess part of that too is because there's laws. There's the canned spam law, and I'm not too familiar with it. I just know if you're B2B, you're probably not. I don't know that it applies, but it would apply to individuals, I believe. And I'm not an attorney, get legal advice, but there's some laws that come into play too. There's requirements too from your email provider too, depending.
Well,
on
and there's who you and there's use. A difference. So there's a difference between. So that was a great distinction there, because we don't need to go too deep in this because we are not lawyers, but there's a difference between me finding your email address, Adam, and going, oh, he might be a potential contact. I'm going to send him a cold email just to see if he's interested, versus me putting you on my list to be emailed regularly. That's different. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about one-off sales emails just to test the waters. That's different. That's like a cold call, which is literally one of the longest standard practices in sales.
Yes.
It's very different when it's like, no, I'm going to add you to my list and pretend and tell my email service provider that you told me you wanted email. That's not the same thing. I'm also obviously not a lawyer, but I think, yes, it does have more protections around individuals than it does business, as most things do. But yeah, that's a big one of like, don't just like, I have an email, like people who sometimes will start their email list by like going through their contact list and just adding anyone they've ever gotten an email from their Gmail. And it's like, no, that's not. Now there's ways you can use that book of people. You can email them first and say, hey, I'm starting a newsletter. would you like to opt in? Here's the link to do that. So now I have your permission. It's different between, it's like, why am I suddenly getting weekly emails from Adam? Like, what is this? I don't even know what this is. I don't remember talking to Adam because we had an email exchange 12 years ago. So yeah, that's a really important one, Adam, is making sure that they is not emailing without the permission, without them opting in. Yep. Yeah, that's a really good one. Okay, so we're bouncing back and forth, right? So I'll go now. I love that one. It was a great starter one. I have like a two-parter because the one I hope is just like very like, of course. But the first one that popped my head was like, not using it. That's a huge email marketing mistake. But I think we already covered that part. For me, one of the biggest ones I see, Adam, is waiting until your list is quote-unquote big enough to start emailing them. And this one drives me crazy. I'm like, well, what's that number? Like, what is that? Like, there is no number. Like, you won't find that. Your list is big enough once you have one person that says, hey, Adam, I'd like to have communication with you. I want you to send me stuff about whatever it is that I'm interested in. So don't – and that's a lot of like sort of some imposter syndrome, or maybe if you harken back to our earlier episode, it's the bully syndrome or just self-doubt and fear. And the reality is, no, like as soon as you start growing that list, like you should be emailing, even if it's one person, two people, five people, doesn't matter, because the consistency is important. But yeah, I think wait until it's quote unquote big enough is a mistake.
That's a great one. That's a great one. And as you're talking about waiting, I'll go next, you know, or not getting started, I guess. So from the very beginning, I think it's important to focus on subject lines. And so, you know, even in the beginning, you may say, well, subject lines aren't that important. Well, if you have a subject line snooze fest, you're not going to get open rates. Subject lines are one of the key pieces, one of the most important parts of email marketing is to get somebody to open up the email. Because if the email never gets opened up, it's a problem. So I think the point here is to not wait to focus on subject lines and to make sure that your subject lines are catchy and have a decent tag on them that allows people to want to open them and makes it desirable. So I think that's number three that I'd go with, Jeff.
1,000%. Yes. And I had that on my list as well. And just a great resource for you all is subjectline.com. It's a free resource. Like you'll get emails from them after you use it, I believe, because I think you have to give them their email to start. But it's literally just a site you can go drop
to join the list.
But I think you can opt out. Anyway,
give them permission to join.
You take whatever subject line you have, you throw it in their little in a field, and you hit it, and it generates and it rates it, and it tells you why it's rating it the way it did. It gives you the pros and cons, and then it'll give you. I think it's like it's probably five. It's probably like almost. It's like a seven or eight, maybe even 10 other ideas. And it'll tell you, like, it'll be like, here's one that's a little more direct. Here's one that's a little more invokes urgency. Here's one that's a little more playful. Here's one that's more serious, et cetera, et cetera. And are they always awesome? No, because sometimes, depending on the way that you're writing your initial subject line, it misinterprets the intention. But I'll tell you what, probably at least 7, if not 8 out of 10 times, it's great. Sometimes it's just a nice way of doing it, and it gives you a 93 out of 100, and you're like, oh, cool, I wrote a great subject line, awesome. Or you're like, oh, and it's like, oh, like one little thing I would do is you used a word that had like eight characters, right? More than 10 characters, or you use more than this many lines. It's telling you that this is what they do. They just study subject lines, open rates, and it changes literally daily. So you're always getting really important info. So it's a free tool. Great. It's also great. It's done by the guy who does, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he has a podcast called Do This, Not That. It's a great marketing podcast. So anyway, great one, but yeah, 100% agree. Subject lines, massively important. Which I didn't have this on my list, but I'm going to do it now. When it comes to things like that, A/B testing. So by A/B testing, what I mean by that is, and not all platforms allow you to do this, but most email providers will allow you to do this, is when you're sending out subject lines, and you can do this actually with your entire email too, depending on, again, on your platform, is testing, A/B testing of like, there's two different subject lines, and see which one, what it'll do is it'll send out to a percentage of your list to get a feel for which one is getting the most opens. And then it will use that one to send to the rest, the bulk of your list. And it's really great. It's a continued learning thing. Cause you can look and see like, okay, like why did that one do better? And, oh, like, why did that one not do better? And you start figuring out, like, oh, my audience likes when I use question marks, or my audience doesn't like when it's questions. They want to be more direct, or I should be using emojis, or they're like, you know, things like that. So doing the A/B testing, I think, is a mistake. If you don't do A/B testing, it's a mistake for sure.
That's great. I think A/B testing is extremely important as the list grows. If you only have a couple people on it, your plan may not allow you to do that. But as you start to upgrade your plans and have a larger email list, it becomes a excellent tool that's really important to make sure you're sending the most effective emails. So that's great, Jeff. For the fifth one, I think what I'll do is I want to talk about the preview text. So on emails, you have the option to put in a preview text. And this is what will pop up when the email comes in to Outlook or on your phone. You'll see the title, but then you'll see just a little preview of like half a sentence worth of information, sometimes up to a sentence, depending on if you're on a phone or on your computer. And that preview text doesn't automatically draw from the email. A lot of times we think that it's the first part of the email. So it's kind of the preview of what's in the email, but you can use the first sentence of the preview text, but you can adjust the preview text to be whatever you want it to be. And Jeff, I remember I've been getting emails from a consulting company that I've just seen for years. I'm in the banking industry, work with banks and credit unions with another business of mine. And one of these consulting companies, in their preview text, every time they send emails for a while, at least, it was for years, they would say something like, if you don't want to receive these emails, click here to unsubscribe. And I'm thinking, why would you start out your preview text with an unsubscribe option? It was, it was extremely counterproductive, because that preview text is there to help your subject line and to draw people in, to show them that the email applies to them and that they have an interest. And if you're saying in your preview text to unsubscribe, it's problematic. It's counterintuitive. So the preview text is really important. I would almost argue that it's almost maybe about the same as your subject line, because that's what people see. And if people aren't going to click into the email, then you're never going to get them to take action that you want inside the email. So a lot of times we spend so much time on the email, but we don't spend any time on our subject line or our preview text. But the preview text doesn't have to be the exact same as your email. It has to be something that relates to the content of the email, but it also has to help
engage, but I guess induce. I don't know.
Entice us. That's the word I was looking for.
Entice. Okay, that sounds like the better word. Email,
so yeah, and induce. It's not
that.
A
that's a really good one. I did not have that one on my list, but I'm glad you brought that, because like it's another spot, another opportunity you have to grab attention and to entice them and to open in your email. And so it's, I think of it some, it's sort of, it's not. So take this, hopefully this makes sense. It's sort of like a subtitle, right? And I only mean that in the sense of it's another opportunity to either clarify or try to engage with or interest your audience, right? It's another opportunity where your subject line might be reflecting or, connected to the main message of your email. Where your preview text could then try, maybe there's something else that's a little more subtle in your email, but you want to draw attention because it might also be popular. You can bring that up. So like one of the things that I do in one of our emails, so we have a couple different email newsletters, but our EduCreator Club emails, is that preview text for us, the way we decide to do it, is always an also. So the subject line is whatever. It's like, 10 email marketing mistakes. That's the subject line, right? But the preview text is also, and because we always share at least three articles and resources in our emails, so like it'll list those. So it's also Apple's new iPhone launch, how to use MySpace in 2025, and whatever, because it gives an opportunity to me to hit some other keywords, maybe a big name company or whatever. So that one, I love that one. It leads right into one that I had, Adam. So we'll go with number six, is send in without testing things, right? And so preview text is a really important one, because I want to see, how does my preview text actually look when it's sent? And almost all, I would say all, but I haven't played with every single email marketing provider out there, but I'm pretty sure most of them all have the ability to send a test, a preview. A lot of them have the ability within your dashboard or your editor or whatever to preview what it looks like in a bunch of different, on mobile, on desktop, on different, in Outlook, et cetera. But you also can send a test to yourself. When I send a test to myself, I open it on my 24-inch iMac. I open it on my 13-inch MacBook Air, and I check it on my phone because it looks different on all of them. And so I'm checking that. The preview text is one of the things I'm checking. I'm also checking, how does my subject line look? Does it get cut off? Is it too long? And so on and so forth. Then I'm actually going to review the entire email. I'm opening every single link in that email every single time. I'm clicking through to make sure that I didn't mess up. I either, like, maybe I didn't update a link that should have been updated, or I copied it wrong or whatever. I want to make sure those emails and those links open up. So testing it, and obviously you should also be reading it to as just a spell check, making sure it says what you want, because things you read things differently, you consume things differently when you're reading it in your inbox than you do when you're in your email editor. So I love it, because the preview test is a big part of that, making sure it looks good. So testing it, don't, like, a huge mistake is people who send it without testing it. And when you test it, you need to be looking at all the different aspects. I can't tell you how crazy it is for me when I get an email where, like, at the bottom of the email, like, where your, like, address and everything's supposed to be, like, it's not updated and it says, like, organization name or something silly like that. I'm like, come on. Like, and I understand that most people won't notice that, but for me in particular, and I'm sure I'm not the only one, when I see that, I'm like, oh, so you don't know what you're doing. Like, why am I going to, right? There's a trust factor there. So, but, like, those are little things. Same thing as if you send me something, I'm excited about that subject line, and your preview text induced me, apparently, from Adam's words. Induced me. Sorry, I'm laughing at you. And I open it, whatever, and then I click on that link and it doesn't work. Oh man, my trust is eroded. Now, hopefully you've built me up and I'll be like, hey Adam, the link is broken. If that's like my third email from you, it's hurting you bad. So testing your emails is mega, mega important. Take the time to send a preview. Send it 3 times if you have to. Like, do, which, by the way, I'm sorry, I know I'm harping on this one, but, like, if I send myself a preview email and I test it and a link is broken, I go in and I fix that link, and then I send another test. I don't just go, oh, I fixed the one thing I found. No, like, test it. It's worth the time. Trust me. So there you go.
That's great. That's great. I love that. And, you know, before you send an email to you in the, you know, continuing on with testing, I think it's also important to check your email to make sure it has personality. And so that's the next thing I want to talk about is, you know, it's important for your emails to have personality and to connect with the audience. In today's day and age, it would be very easy for somebody to just use AI to create an email written by AI that's completely robotic and completely lacking personality.
Wait a minute. Are you telling me, Adam Whitmer, that people will just use AI to write their emails? And not, like, check them at all?
I receive plenty of emails that appear to have been written by AI, because you can test and see. Those of us who use AI, we understand that. And the problem with AI is it's not going to tell any personal stories. It's not going to be connecting the same way with your audience. AI does a great job. You can put prompts in to have it, you know, be more personable. But there's not going to be necessarily a consistent tone. It could be all over the place. So while you're testing your email, also look at it for the tone. Look at it to make sure it has personality. Look at it to make sure that it can connect with your audience. And so if your audience is a bunch of bakers who like baked goods and cookies and pies, you probably don't want to be constantly talking about your kids' soccer league unless it somehow relates to that and you could pull that story into it. So I think it's really important to look at, have personality. And yes, if you're big into soccer and baked goods, if you can tie the two together, more power to you, because it becomes a personality. But our emails have to resonate with the people reading them. And so make sure they have personality, make sure that there's connection. So that's what I have for number 7, Jeff.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, connected. They need to stay connected to the there's a reason I asked you to send me emails. And if it's about baked goods and not about soccer, your kid's soccer, then yeah. And to Adam's point, if you can tie it in, and it's okay to bring a little bit of your life into it, but if you tie it in, that's awesome. That's a connection. But yeah, be careful with that one. I'm going to go with, I think you said consistency. So I'm going to go to this one next. Cause you were talking about consistency and like the tone and the voice that you write with and stuff. For me, just consistency in general and how often you send is super important. And we've talked about this. I know I've said this on this podcast before at some point, but I say this all the time when people are new and they're like, how much, when they're talking about whether it's blogging, podcasting, doing videos on YouTube, posting on social media, doing email, whatever. And they're like, how often should I? For me, the answer is always consistently, whatever that looks like. If your capacity only allows you to put out one email a month, then that's what you should be doing. I believe most cases, it's better to do more, but that's not the point. Yours is individual. You need to be able to stay consistent so that you are consistently communicating with your audience. And it's okay if that consistency is only once or twice a month. It's also okay if that's 7 days a week, if that makes sense for your audience, of course, and they will tell you by number of unsubscribes and things of that nature. But figuring out how to be consistent, you need to be consistent in the way in which you send, the type of content that you're sending, to Adam's point on the most recent one, the voice in which you send with, et cetera. So that part of this is I need to get to know you, and I also need to know what I should be expecting from you. And you want me to get to the point where I'm just waiting for your email every week or every month or whatever it is. So consistency across the board.
That's great. Great. And Jeff, I think we have time for two more. Let's round this off at 10. So in lines with being consistent, I think it's also important to have a strategy. Sometimes I've seen where people write too many emails without a reason on why they're sending emails. You shouldn't just feel like obligated to send an email. Jeff said, be consistent. But if you're trying to do an email a day, you need to have a reason why you're doing an email a day. And so it's important to have a strategy, to test that strategy and revise a strategy. If you think you're going to start an email a day, it's good to be consistent, but you may realize it's too much and there's not enough reason or strategy behind it. And so you may need to pull that back. So I think that making sure that your emails are relevant, don't make them relentless, make them relevant, make them connect. And so I think that's kind of been a theme here, is they have to connect with your audience. So along the lines with consistent, let's also not send too many emails, but be strategic about the ones that we do send.
All right. So I have a problem because I have a whole bunch more that we could do. So I'm wondering if we're going to just call this episode like 10 email marketing mistakes to avoid. And then let's do another episode where it's literally going to be 10 more email marketing. Do you think we have another 10 after I share this one? Or do you?
Well, I don't have to like think about that for a minute. We have two options. We could do a rapid fire here after number 10.
I have 10 more on my list right now. And
let's do it. You're thinking of things. Let's do it. Let's end it here, and then our next episode, let's do 10 more.
Let's do it. So this is part one, and we'll do another episode. I think that's going to be really valuable. Okay, so I'm going to go with – you said strategy, so then I'm going to go here. I think this works. It's part of that, which is only emailing when you want to sell something. So only thinking, well, I'm only going to send emails when I'm trying to sell things. This doesn't work because, one, it's going to be inconsistent. Two, it's – you're never going to build that know, like, and trust. Now, as with everything on this podcast, there's always a little asterisk that says, unless this is the right strategy for your business, right? Because there are some things where it's like, hey, if your email list is sold, if you're selling the opt-in, it's like, hey, opt into this email list, and I'm going to send you a sales email every month so you can buy stuff. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about you build an email list, and you're like, they downloaded this lead magnet or they're part of my community and I wanted to share this, but like I'm only really going to email them my newsletter when I know that I can put something to sell in it. That's just not – that's not a strategy. Or at least it's a bad strategy. So only email when you want to sell something, not a good strategy. Definitely avoid that mistake. And unfortunately, yeah, I have seen that where they're like, yeah, that's all I want to do is I just want to sell. And it's like, well, you told them to sign up for it to get free tips and tricks. So only email when you think you have something to sell. Number 10.
That's great. And what I'm going to do, Jeff, is I'm going to start number one off in our next episode to disagree with you on that. And so we'll leave a little cliffhanger.
I love it.
Because my number one strategy for our next episode will be not trying to sell in your email. So that's where we'll go.
I don't think that's disagreeing, but I know where you're going and I love it.
I'm going to disagree with you. So, and I'll explain why, because I actually do exactly what you just said, and it works really well for me. So we'll talk about that in the next episode. Little cliffhanger. So you'll have to come back for episode 31. Now, before we close this out, Jeff, what do you think? Anything we need to do to wrap this up. Anything you want to share? Any resources you have?
Nah, take us out, dude. We're good.
All right. So
let's roll.
Let's do that. So that's all we have for this episode of the Small Business BS Podcast. For more information on this episode and other episodes, go to smallbusinessbs.com. Until next time, have fun, be strategic, and get out there and grow your business. We'll see you all next week.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Small Business BS Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe and share it with fellow entrepreneurs. Until next time, keep thinking big and taking action in your business, one step at a time.